Hello and welcome to a special edition of Teal Time with David Teal.
Oh, I didn't know it was special.
NCAA bracket time. Since we started this podcast now back in August, I think this was the one I've been waiting for the most.
It is the best time of year.
I would say that, you know, one of the Selection Sunday, while the event itself, certainly this year.
Oh, the show was horrible.
Was bad. The packaging of releasing it, whatever you could take from that. But, I mean, just knowing where teams are going to be placed is one of the best days of the year. I don't care for I'd be fine if they just released it on the AP wire and we looked at it and could discuss it. But the show itself was really bad. Like, the alphabetical releasing of teams, and you're thinking, oh, who's on the bubble, and where would they be?
Yeah, exactly.
In the alphabet.
Yeah, and the fact that they did this dramatic reveal to start the show of the automatic qualifiers, as if UMBC and Radford didn't know they were in the tournament. What Radford and UMBC and all their fans want to know is who we playing.
The good thing about it is that it was so universally panned that they would have to change it next year. But, you know, I mean, the idea, like, so you have the Radford folks and they're in an auditorium and you get to see them on TV celebrating. That always worked fine when they showed them on the bracket. They didn't have to release them, you know, team by team. And it was a really bad way to do it.
I can't imagine.
And they didn't even get the whole bracket in the first 10 minutes, which is what their promise was.
No. And what I can't imagine is they're brainstorming in a meeting somewhere in Atlanta or New York or both, and somebody, more than one person, sat around and thought, hey, this is a really good idea.
Well, you know, the women's bracket, I think I saw yesterday, they came out and said, here are the final eight teams that we're considering. And then a day before they released the bracket.
Wow.
Which I think is a really neat idea. To get people talking.
Makes eight teams pretty nervous.
Yeah, but, you know, for a tournament that's obviously playing a little bit of second fiddle, you know, it generates some interest. I would love if I was changing something about that show, to have on the right side of the screen a list of the teams that are the most on the furthest end of the bubble, and as they get in the bracket, remove them or leave them up there. And so then you know you're not trying to rifle through your mind, who's left? Because when Arizona State popped up the other day, I'm like, oh, man, that's not good for a bunch of teams.
Yeah.
Because they were, you know, right at that last team, next to last team in.
Yeah, well, clearly because they're in the first four in Dayton.
Right. And then when Syracuse came in, my mind was blown. I know that you probably thought a little higher of Syracuse than I
originally had Syracuse in my bracket until Davidson beat Rhode Island in the Atlantic 10, which is essentially a bid thief. Davidson.
Yeah.
Gets the automatic. Rhode Island slides into the at-large pool, and I then bumped Syracuse because they were my last team in. But the committee kept them in. The team that the committee bumped out was Notre Dame. I did not have Notre Dame in my bracket before the Davidson Rhode Island result.
So when you made your bracket, so there's like philosophical differences here of how you determine who should be in a bracket. Do you think it's the 68 best teams, or, well, the 36 best teams because of the automatic qualifiers, or do you determine, based on resume, who you think the committee was going to put in? Which of the two were you?
I try, looking at the metrics that I know the committee uses, I try to be predictive. I mean, I don't sit down and watch West Coast games. I'm not an expert on St. Mary's basketball. I know who Jock Landale is, and I know that guy can ball, but I don't have a feel for how St. Mary's compares to Syracuse. I just don't. I've seen Syracuse a lot. I've seen precious little of St. Mary's. That's the committee's job. But just looking at them through the metrics that they present, they're very transparent about that in terms of the team sheets that they make available online on a daily basis. They're updated each day, and you can follow them. So that's what I try to do.
But the one thing you can't be predictive about is a Notre Dame, because you don't know how much they're going to weigh Bonzi Colson and the other guy, Farrell, right?
Yeah, Matt Farrell. Truly a unique situation. And Bruce Rasmussen, the Creighton Athletic Director and Chairman of the Selection Committee, indicated as much on a media call Wednesday before the selection show, where he said just in his 5 years on the committee, they had never had a situation like Notre Dame. And I've been doing this for far longer, and I can't ever remember a player of Bonzi Colson's magnitude, a preseason All-American, who literally missed half of the regular season only to return for the last week of the regular season. So, okay, here's how they look now. Here's how they looked in November. But why I left Notre Dame out is, even if you take Bonzi Colson out of the equation, yes, I know Notre Dame won Maui and beat Wichita State on a neutral floor, compelling final there. But, you know, even with Bonzi Colson, they then
lost to Ball State.
Lost to Ball State at home and to Indiana. Both of them very unattractive.
And down the stretch, I mean, the win against Virginia Tech in the tournament was nice, but they lost to Virginia. I mean, obviously, the number one overall seed, not expected to win that game.
Right.
But they didn't do themselves a lot of help with two games, that game and then the game in the ACC tournament. If they beat Virginia, they win another game in the ACC tournament, they're in.
Absolutely.
The same with Louisville. If they don't choke a lead away against Virginia, they're in probably, right?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think Louisville was that close. I was in the minority. I liked Syracuse much more than Louisville. And Louisville was not among the last four teams that the NCAA left out. So, no, and I thought Syracuse's win at Louisville was a big, in the regular season, was a big part of that. But Notre Dame people can counter and say, hey, we went to Syracuse without Bonzi Colson and beat them.
Do you think Syracuse is a better team than Notre Dame?
It's a great question. If they played today on a neutral floor, I'd probably favor Notre Dame.
I think I would too. But that's the fascinating part of this is valuing, you know, they say you look at a resume as a whole. So Oklahoma gets a lot of credit for what they did early in the season.
Yep.
They've been dreadful down the stretch. Mm-hmm. So where do you value closing power, or, you know, interesting.
On the team sheets, they've eliminated that component. The team sheet used to have last 10 games.
Yeah, yeah.
How you finish. That's no longer.
I know, but do you think that
I think it should be part of it? Yes. It should be. How you close should matter because that's the team you are now. That's how you're playing now. That's why if that metric was back in play, then the inclusion of Arizona State and Oklahoma borders on indefensible because they were so poor down the stretch. Now I understand Arizona beat Xavier in Kansas. Mm-hmm. Neither of those games in Tempe. That's a big.
It's good a win. I mean, those are some of the best wins
Team. Or in Tucson, excuse me. I got the city wrong. But no, those are as good a non-conference wins as you can imagine. You cannot discount those. But Arizona State finished four, and this is one team I had in the field that didn't make it. Southern California finished second in the Pac-12. They were the number two seed in the Pac-12 tournament. They finished four games ahead of Arizona State in the standings. And I know the Pac-12 does not play around robin like most of the major conferences these days. But still, four games is a huge margin. Not only that, Arizona State spit the bit against Colorado in the first round of the Pac-12, mm-hmm. whereas USC mm-hmm. made the final against Arizona. So if I'm USC or if I'm the Pac-12 commissioner, Larry Scott, I got a beef. Now, was I outraged? USC was one of my last four teams in. Arizona State was one of my last four teams. I'm not going to go crazy, but I disagreed. And I think St. Mary's belonged in. Mm-hmm. Just on sheer vote, they won 28 games. Mm-hmm. And they beat Gonzaga on the road. Mm-hmm. To me, if you're a mid-major, that's good enough. But it wasn't. They were among the last four teams out.
And over the last, I don't have the numbers in front of me, you'll know this better than I do. Over the last you know, 6 or 7 years, more often than not, the mid-major who's sitting there on the bubble is the one that doesn't get in, right? I mean, that's happened a lot over the years.
It has.
Middle Tennessee a couple years ago, right?
Well, Middle Tennessee State this year.
Yeah, right. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Not Middle Tennessee State in previous years. There was talk last year if Middle Tennessee State had not won its conference tournament, yes, it probably wasn't going to get in. And you could tell by the way it was seeded, having won its conference tournament, that the Blue Raiders weren't going to get in. I was not high on Middle Tennessee State's chances. I don't have a real problem with that squad being left out. There really wasn't much to recommend in the non-conference. Their best non-conference win was at Murray State. It's an NCAA qualifier out of the OVC, but still nothing really to write home about. And you can't lose to the number 222 team in the country.
Yeah, didn't even make it to their conference championship game.
Yeah, no, that's the quarters. That's not the semis.
That's right.
Even.
That's right. Yeah.
They lost to Southern Miss in the CUSA tournament quarters, and that was just a killer. Had Middle Tennessee gotten to the final, say, and lost to Western Kentucky, then yeah, maybe you could make the case, but the Southern Miss loss to me was disqualifying. And hey, you know, Nevada this year gets an at large, and you know, and had some good non-conference success and played a stout schedule. So I'm glad, you know, the mid majors didn't get totally shut out. And St. Bonaventure, received an at large out of the A-10. You know, earlier in the season we were talking about the A-10 being a one bid league for the first time in about a dozen years, but lo and behold, they get three in.
It's a fascinating thing to talk about. And I do know the committee has been very open about their criteria. So if they say we're not considering the last 10 games more so than anything else, that you can't fault them for sticking to their criteria.
Right.
I disagree that like you do, that's not that should be a valid point of what they consider. But, you know, they say they don't. What's crazy to me is that Oklahoma isn't even considered one of the last four in.
Yeah,
considering how they played down the stretch.
No, they were a ten seed, and so they were, I don't know if comfortably in the field would be an accurate assessment, but clearly an easier selection for the committee than some team.
All right, well, let's move on. We've gotten into a lot of what I think is the interesting stuff from Selection Sunday.
Yeah.
Let's get into the bracket.
Sure.
I don't know if we haven't talked about this before. I don't know if you want to go game by game or
I have not filled out a bracket.
Okay. We'll touch on some things and as we always do, we'll go deeper than we expect on other things.
Sure.
Virginia is the number one overall seed. They had a lot of competitive games down the stretch in the ACC, which is to be expected, but they were very, very, very impressive in Brooklyn, I thought.
You're correct. I mean, to follow up what they did in the regular season, to go 17-1 in that league, that produced 9 NCAA teams and darn near 10, and then to win 3 more in Brooklyn on top of that. I mean, think about it. They played 21 ACC games and lost once by 1 point in overtime to Virginia Tech on Virginia's home floor. So on the flip side, Virginia played 12 ACC games away from home, 9 road, 3 neutral, and went 12-0. That's preposterous.
And they controlled those 3 ACC tournament games, right? I mean, it's not like they were playing from behind a whole lot. They were, especially in the second half of those games. It was a supremely impressive performance. And I thought down the stretch, and I know that the ACC is going to beat you down some.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they were running a little low on batteries towards the end of the season, and then they came up to Brooklyn, and I saw none of that. Injured Kyle Guy was outstanding.
MVP. You know, as I tweeted after the game, is he the first MVP of the tournament to be wearing a knee brace?
Yeah, incredible run up there in Brooklyn.
Now, he played great, and if he hadn't been the MVP, I think Devin Hall would have been a very worthy choice as well. He was his typical consistent self on both ends of the floor. I think one game he had 6 assists and 1 turnover. People don't realize that guy leads the ACC in assist to turnover ratio. He's not a point guard, but he still comes up with 4 or 5 dimes a game, rarely turns the ball over. He's their best or most consistent 3-point shooter. He doesn't have Guy's range or Jerome's flash, but I really like that guy.
Well, that's a very unintentional tease, because you wrote a nice piece on him that ran in Sunday's paper. If you want to find it, you can go to our website, or you can go to Teal or my Twitter feed. Actually, if you go to Teal's Twitter feed, you're going to have to cycle through a bunch of live tweeting from a game. You can find it easier on my feed. I'm not begging for hits or likes, but either one of our feeds, you can find it. It's a really well-written story about how faith played a part in his decision to come to Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech recruited him hard. Seth Greenberg actually was very complimentary when I talked to him earlier this season. We were talking about UVA, and he specifically mentioned Devin Hall and said, look, we recruited him hard, and I could just tell, even back then, what a mature kid he was, and just had the way he carried himself in all ways. Would have loved to have had him at Virginia Tech.
Faith played a big role in his trip to Virginia, mm-hmm. and I don't want to spoil it here. Go read the story. Faith played a big role in his Saturday in the last game of the regular season. It's a very interesting nugget that you got that I don't think anyone else had.
No, they didn't, and I was very grateful that Devin's dad volunteered that information during our interview. And then Devin was very gracious in talking about it, because I wanted to follow up with him, because I'd already talked to Devin, not to get too much into the sausage making here about how our stories are crafted, but I'd finished the interview with Devin, subsequently talked to his dad, and then when his dad was telling me about this thing that happened after the final game of the regular season, I needed to go back to Devin in New York and
also keep it
that.
Cool, right?
Right.
So no one else.
Right. I waited for the rest of the rest of the journos, my peers, to kind of clear away from Devin's locker, and had a little private conversation with him.
While we're teasing things, depending on when this comes tonight, we're recording this on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So tonight,
Tuesday afternoon,
Tuesday at 7 p.m., we're going to post a story on our website about Tony Bennett and the Virginia coach's interesting path to Charlottesville. Again, I don't think we want to give too much away. Please go read the story. It is a very well written story, and a lot of unreported so far facts about the search and how he got to Virginia in that story.
I think it's a really cool narrative, Jonathan. It's a story that I pitched to you quite a while ago, mm-hmm. and I've been working for quite some time. And the principals involved in the search were very nice to give me their time. Tony, his wife, Craig Littlepage, the former athletic director at UVA, and his top lieutenant, John Oliver, who was a key mover and shaker in bringing Tony Bennett to Charlottesville. Jim Sturck, the athletic director at Washington State at the time, where Tony was the coach. Richie McKay, who's now the coach at Liberty and is a dear friend of Tony's, played. As you'll read, Richie's role was essential in this. And it is a long and meandering path that led Tony Bennett to UVA. And as I teased with Norm on the podcast last week, it arguably all started with a fifth-round draft choice by Tony Bennett's beloved Green Bay Packers in 1992. I know that sounds strange, but when you read the story, I think you'll understand.
There's late night pizza.
There is.
There's a lot of interesting stuff in that story. It is, don't freak out when you see the length, because it reads very briskly and is really interesting to find out how the three-time National Coach of the Year now has wound up in Charlottesville and is leading a team that is the number one overall seed.
He's been a head coach for 12 years. He's been the National Coach of the Year three times. That's nuts.
After Jeff Jones left and Dave Loto was in, they were a bottom third finisher in the ACC, right?
For the 2 years preceding Tony's arrival, they really struggled. Now, in 2007, Virginia had shared the ACC regular season title and advanced to the second round of the NCAA tournament. And you thought, wow, Lato's really making progress here. He had taken over for Pete Gillen, who had only been to one NCAA tournament, I believe, in 8 or 9 years. But it really declined quickly. And that's what led Craig Littlepage to make a change. He explains that in the story. So Bennett took over a program that wasn't rock bottom by any stretch. It had been to 13 NCAA tournaments between 1981 and 2007. That's a pretty good run there under Terry Holland and Jeff Jones. But, you know, it needed some work. And, you know, Virginia's in the NCAA tournament for the fifth consecutive year. That's never happened before in Charlottesville. And not only that, if the Cavaliers win as expected on Friday against Maryland Baltimore County in the first round, Tony Bennett will become only the fourth coach in ACC history whose team over five consecutive years has advanced in both the ACC and NCAA tournaments. And the other three are Gary Williams, Dean Smith, and Mike Krzyzewski.
It's pretty good company.
Yeah, not bad.
I mean, so they went to a Final Four in the 80s. They had the Ralph Sampson era. Are we living in Virginia's best era for basketball?
Most consistent, certainly. I mean, the Sampson years are unparalleled. So I'm about a three-time National Player of the Year and the buzz that that created around the program. And then, oddly enough, the year after he graduates, 1984, with a losing conference record, Virginia went 6-8 in the ACC in 1984 and then lost its first round ACC tournament game to Wake Forest. I was there. I was talking to those players in Terry Holland. They all knew they weren't getting in the NCAA tournament. They were going to the NIT. Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, their AD, Dick Schultz, was on the NCAA tournament selection committee. And hey, come Sunday, the Cavaliers are in the field. And everybody's like, wow, isn't that a coincidence? But, you know, you can go down the conspiracy theory path all you'd like, but then they end up in the Final Four. And, by the way, what city did they go to get to the Final Four in the regionals, semifinals, and final? Atlanta.
Ah.
Where will they be this year if they reach the semifinals of the regionals? Back to Atlanta.
Hey, this is Jonathan Heater. I am interrupting the podcast. When David and I recorded this podcast earlier this afternoon, we did not know that DeAndre Hunter would be ruled out for the NCAA tournament, so that's why you didn't hear us discuss the injury to DeAndre Hunter, Virginia's phenomenal sixth man. So just wanted to clear up, that's why you don't hear us talking at all about Hunter. It happened after we recorded the podcast. Thanks for listening, and back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
It's a good segue to talk about their path.
Sure.
So we both anticipate a relatively breezy game on Friday night, very late tip-off.
Oh, yeah, deadline friendly. Isn't that sweet?
Second round, Creighton or Kansas State?
I think they'll probably get Creighton. I'm a little partial to Creighton because Steve Merfeld, who famously coached Hampton University to a first-round upset of Iowa State out in Boise many moons ago, and that great
you remember the
moment.
Feet, the feet up in the air?
Oh, yeah. We're not our Dave Johnson, but David Johnson is the Hampton player who's lifting him up. Well, Murph is an assistant coach at Creighton and has been for several years, bumped into him a few years ago at an NCAA tournament site in Philadelphia where the Blue Jays were playing. But Creighton comes out of the Big East and is, you know, playing well. You know, they don't have Doug McDermott anymore, the coach's son, but still a solid program. That's just my hunch that Virginia will get Creighton in round two on Sunday.
The very interesting matchup, I think, and as soon as I saw the bracket, and I do think that just looking at it, the two seed, they certainly don't have the toughest two seed.
No, Cincinnati?
But the 4 and 5 in that bracket, I mean, I know Kentucky and Arizona have both had stretches this year where they haven't been great.
Correct.
But they both did just run through their conference tournaments.
They did win their conference tournaments. And this has been, I've heard from some Virginia fans who are none too pleased. We're the top overall seed. Look at this bracket. Who we get in the regional semifinals. I would say a couple things. Number one, you get to the regional semis, unless the other side of the bracket has gone completely kerflooey, you're going to be playing a really good team. That's number one. Number two, You're not going to play Arizona and Kentucky. You're going to play one of the two. Kentucky lost 10 games this season, okay?
Yeah.
Who would you rather have as a number four other than Arizona? You want Gonzaga? Okay, Gonzaga doesn't play in a power conference. But Gonzaga's 30-4 and played for the national championship last year. They're really good. Auburn, by the way, is another number four. Auburn won the regular season in the SEC. You know, didn't play as well in the conference tournament, but you know, they can play. I think Auburn's better than Kentucky. I'd rather play Kentucky than I would play Auburn.
The other four would be Wichita State.
Yeah. Now, that I think you can take some issue with Wichita State coming out of the American Athletic, but that's been a quality league all year. Sent three teams to the tournament, and you know, the Shockers have NCAA not tradition, but experience. You know, that Craig Marshall has taken them to a Final Four. Would I rather play Wichita State in Atlanta than Arizona? Sure.
I think that while I agree with everything you're saying about this season and overall team, the dangers of those teams, DeAndre Ayton may be the best player in the tournament, right? I mean, he is incredible. I think he was like 30-something and 18 in the last two games in the Pac-12 tournament. Generally speaking, you know, the guys you see come out and just dominate and take teams on deep runs are guards that, you know, Kemba Walker, Shabazz Napier. It doesn't happen so much with big guys because, you know, you can do some things defensively to stop that. But he's so versatile and can play on the outside and the perimeter. He is a guy that I'd be very nervous about.
Yeah. And, hey, a similar player who can go inside and out, Marvin Bagley, scored 30 against Virginia and Durham. The rest of his teammates only scored 33. Right.
And, you know, I think if Virginia had Alonzo Trier, they'd be much more dangerous than they are. And, you know, we get into a second...
You mean if Arizona did.
Yes, right, sorry. If Arizona had Alonzo Trier, they'd be much more dangerous than they are. And if you get into the second weekend of the tournament, if Arizona's there, well, that spotlight on Sean Miller in this NCAA investigation is going to be very bright. He's going to be answering no questions about basketball. He's going to be answering a lot of questions about the FBI, I would guess.
He might. I don't know if he'll answer them.
He'll be asked a lot of questions about the FBI investigation. But that would be, you know, I still think based on what Virginia does as a team, you know, I would put them on through to the Elite Eight. But Arizona is the one team I think in their bracket that I think is the most dangerous team in the bracket.
Yeah, I agree. And then
if they can get past Arizona/Kentucky, you know, I think that the Elite Eight game could be actually easier.
I think it'd be a rock fight
They play
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati's losing to Georgia State, Mr. Teal.
Oh, there you go. Well, then we don't have to worry about that.
My alma mater is 2-0 in first round games in their last two appearances.
And Coach Hunter, I mean, he's awesome, man. Let's just hope that if they do win, he doesn't injure himself again like he did last time.
You know, as a proud alma mater of Georgia State, I'm shocked that he's somebody that I'd be shocked if bigger schools weren't calling. Because one, he's a great human being.
He is. He's so neat.
He's telegenic. He's great with the media. And they're living, you know, I was in school when Lefty Drizel was there, and he built essentially the program at Georgia State. And Hunter's been more consistent than even Lefty was at Georgia State.
Yes.
And there's a lot of, you know, it's a bad arena downtown. They don't have, you know, top flight facilities. They have to recruit against, you know, that Georgia Tech, Kennesaw State. And they are right now the best basketball program in the state of Georgia.
Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah. I might be damning with faint praise, but...
Correct. But they have, without question, been the most consistent team in that city. So they're, of course, going to beat Cincinnati. So that takes one of the threats out of play.
So then you could be looking at a Virginia-Tennessee regional final. And the Vols have had a great year. Rick Barnes, you know, if Tony Bennett wasn't around, Rick Barnes would be a leading candidate for National Coach of the Year. He's done a great job.
Yep, it's one of those things where, you know, he got away from Texas, and they get a fresh start, and then he gets a fresh start somewhere else. And you know, they've had Admiral Schofield, I believe, is the guard that's been really good. You know, they had a really fun game to watch in the SEC championship game against Kentucky. They just kind of ran out of gas, and Kentucky's got Kevin Knox. They've got, as they usually do, a lot of freshmen who are growing up as they get
when Kentucky starts knocking down threes,
yeah,
which they haven't been for most of the year. I saw them live against Virginia Tech back in December, and they did hit a bunch of threes that game. And I know one of Kentucky's assistants, Joel Justice, very well, and we were texting after the game, and even he admitted, I'm shocked at how well we shot the ball against Virginia Tech, and I'm guessing he was similarly surprised and pleased by how well they shot it where was the SEC tournament in St. Louis?
Yeah, Scott Trade Center.
Yeah, how crazy is that? Southeastern Conference playing its league tournament in St. Louis.
There are a lot of empty seats in a lot of conference tournaments over the last week.
Well, they're always, with the expanded conferences, meaning prolonged tournaments, you know, now 5 days, you're going to have them. When the ACC tournament's in Greensboro, Tuesday and Wednesday's terrible also. That's just the way it is. You get to the quarters, the semis, and the final. That's when people are accustomed to coming out, and that's when the arena rocks.
Do you like it in New York, the ACC tournament?
I do. Selfishly, it's not great. I mean, because it's hard to get to. It's expensive. We stayed in Manhattan. The subway, it's quick, but a lot of time the subway going to the championship game Saturday night, if I was claustrophobic, I never would have made it.
Yeah.
Because it really was. You were packed in there, elbow to elbow. It was unbelievable. But that arena Saturday night, for Carolina UVA, was as juiced as you could have it for a conference tournament championship game. It was fabulous in there. And Barclays Center is a state-of-the-art arena. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you cannot ask for better from a spectator point of view. You know, great working conditions for us knuckleheads. Personally, and I think the ACC should continue to keep Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. in the rotation. When it was there 3 years ago or 2 years ago, it was great. Just a great vibe, you know, great places to go. When, you know, on Friday and Saturday, you got to kill time.
Yeah.
And especially if you're a fan, and D.C., you can walk all over and place on. I told John Swafford this story. He was asking me how I liked it in D.C. and New York. And the cool thing about the experience in D.C. was, on Friday of the semifinals, which don't start until 7 o'clock, I had some time to kill. It was a beautiful day, so I just went out wandering. Next thing you know, I'm down by the White House. And then in comes Marine One, lands on the South Lawn to pick up Obama, and then off they go. And I'm like all the rest of the tourists. I'm just sitting there staring up the sky, waving. Yeah. I mean, it was cool, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not in Greensboro, that's for sure.
There's no better city that I've ever been to in this country to be sequestered in than Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
If you have any interest in history or this country, then I don't know where you could find a better place.
No, it's,
and I love New York, but D.C. is an optimal place to be stuck for a few days.
Yeah, and D.C. is central to.
Yep.
I know without Maryland, there's no longer a team there. But come on, Virginia and Virginia Tech are so many alums.
Yeah, and there's not
right,
a team
right there
in Manhattan.
And Notre Dame and the northern schools can get there. Mm-hmm. I think the ACC tournament in D.C. is fabulous.
And the gym's right downtown.
There. Yeah.
So, and it's easy to get in and out. You know, with the subway, Brooklyn, I'm guessing it's a little harder because you're flying into Queens, you're going to Manhattan or Brooklyn, and then you're having to take the train. But I wondered, you know, what the atmosphere was the first 2 days. But you know, I would guess, especially with Boston College and Syracuse and some of those schools from farther away, Louisville, Notre Dame that have joined the ACC, you're not getting a lot of fan bases that are making the trip for the first, second round games.
Agreed.
Um,
But we digress. Back to the brackets.
All right. So I would like, if just looking at it and not have, like you said, not have filled out a bracket. Oh, Miami and Loyola. Loyola's been a buzzy team.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen enough out of the Hurricanes in the last couple of weeks to think that they're safe? Or do you think
I don't know about safe. I mean, Loyola won a good league in the Missouri Valley. And, you know, they're sitting there at 28-5. Had a heck of a year. This is the first time they've been back in the tournament in a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact time frame. But Jim Larrañaga knows a thing or two about postseason play. And the Hurricanes, yeah, they close with a nice home win, albeit very close over Virginia Tech in the regular season. They got run pretty
one up in Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Down the stretch.
But then Carolina, with a vengeance, reversed that result in Brooklyn.
Yeah. I like Tennessee and Virginia in the Elite Eight.
There you go. I'm right with you there, and I've said all along I think Virginia's going to go to the Final Four. And
you spoiled that with your column on Sunday.
Yes.
Monday. All right. Looking at the Western bracket, out of the top half, what do you see? Who do you like?
You know, Xavier's had a great year. I saw Xavier in person last season in Orlando at the NCAA tournament, and they absolutely boat raced Florida State in the second round. I was like, whoa, these guys got it going on, and they were dinged up. They didn't have their full complement of players. Blewett is a legit All-American. That guy can absolutely go. Really, really like that squad. I know they kind of faltered late in regulation against Providence in the Big East tournament and ended up losing that game in overtime. But I think Xavier is good enough to beat Gonzaga, get to the Elite Eight, where I have them losing to John Beilein and Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan's been playing very, very well down the stretch. They won the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, for second consecutive year.
And then they're going to have 2 weeks off.
That's what's going to be fascinating, Jonathan. And Jim Delaney, the Big Ten commissioner, has already said, look, we're never doing this again.
It was a terrible idea.
His coaches hated it. They had to condense the conference schedule into a regular season that was 1 week
short. Just to have the Garden open, right? They wanted to play in the Garden. The Big East was already in the Garden.
And the Big East is already there during the traditional conference championship week. So the Big Ten tried it once. Michigan and the other three Big Ten teams in the field will be very well rested, and if they're rusty and they come out as such and falter early in the tournament, Jim Delaney is going to get roasted.
I think they have a little bit of a grace with who they're playing in the first couple rounds, where they could get into the second weekend and then all that stuff's gone.
Don't sleep on Houston. I don't know a lot about the Cougars.
You know their coach.
Yeah, but they've played really well and played very well in the American Athletic Conference tournament. Lost a heck of a final to Cincinnati.
North Carolina is opening with Lipscomb and then would play A&M or Providence. I think the SEC. I mean, I know Tennessee had a very good season. Auburn was good. It seems like the league is catching up a little bit more with Kentucky. Kentucky had that run where they were just, the dominant team.
Oh yeah, they had
a long time.
1 year they went 18-0 through there. The year they were undefeated going to the Final Four and lost to Wisconsin. Right.
And there wasn't a second team in the league that was like 16-2.
No,
but it seems like at least the top half of the SEC has risen to the level.
Well, the SEC got 8 teams.
Yeah.
And none of them was particularly close to being left out. I mean, everybody was confident that
Alabama was the closest, I guess, right?
Yeah, and there are 9.
Yeah.
So I don't know if A&M gets by Providence. I'm kind of partial to Providence. I like Ed Cooley. I think he's a heck of a coach. Mm-hmm. And then Rodney Bullock from Kickatan is an essential part of that team. And they'll be in Charlotte, where Dave Johnson and I will be with UVA, and I know DJ is going to write a story on Bullock, and because this is it for him. This is his final season of college basketball. But I do. I like Michigan. I like, and it won't be. Michigan would encounter Carolina in the Sweet 16, and then I think Xavier in the final out in Los Angeles. But I, you know, John Beilein's been to the Final Four previously. I think this squad can get him back.
One thing that I think is really interesting in this bracket is Missouri's now only one game into Michael Porter being back. If this week, or well, they got a short exit from the SEC tournament, he's going to have some extra work. They could be dangerous in the second round because, one, that program was in complete disarray, and Quanzo Martin has turned it around, and he's done so with a very good recruiting class, including two Porters. You know, the younger Porter that has played is reclassified into this signing class. They could be a dangerous team if Porter is healthy and playing what to the level that we expected him to play based on, you know, what he was as a high school player.
And, you know, the Tigers get Florida State in the first round. And Florida State's the most unreliable team and has been for years, it seems. Florida State can make the Sweet 16. I mean, they've got that kind of talent. But yet they could also flame out right away. You never know with the Seminoles.
This is a particularly difficult bracket to project because, one, there's so much parity this year, and even the good teams like Carolina and Duke have had such stinkers to go with such impressive performances.
Carolina's lost 10 games.
I know.
10. And if they'd beaten Virginia, they'd have been the first 9-loss team to ever be a 1. They were going to be a 1 seed instead of Xavier out
they
west.
Won that.
If North Carolina had beaten UVA, absolutely.
In their win, I may be misremembering, but their win over Duke in the ACC tournament got close late.
Oh, yeah.
They played pretty well.
Oh, no, they played great that night, and they were ahead comfortably, and then Duke went on a late 13-0 run and actually, you know, had the ball down 3. Had the ball with a chance to tie, and Grayson Allen didn't get any kind of a decent look, and it happened right in front of where Norm and I were sitting, and it was not close.
Yeah, I see. Norm's an easy one to pick out on television.
So am I, according to my family, because of my bald spot. So,
well, Norm's red hair makes it pretty easy to find you guys on television. All right, let's go over to the Midwest. We'll close with Virginia Tech.
Sure.
In the Midwest, Kansas is the number one seed.
How about those first three seeds?
They're the
Kansas, Duke, Michigan State.
Yeah,
Krzyzewski, Izzo.
If
Hall of Famers.
If Virginia's path, I probably misspoke when I said Virginia's path is the most difficult. The Midwest is the toughest. That is a
dude.
As you believe, you tweeted the bracket of death.
Yeah.
The East and the West, you know, based on those fields, I think would have been relatively easier past the Final Four for Virginia. But the Midwest is pretty loaded.
Yeah, it is. And clearly Virginia couldn't have been in the Midwest opposite of number 2 from its own conference.
Right, right.
But no, just, I know Duke did not win the ACC tournament and Michigan State did not win the Big Ten tournament. But you get no argument from anyone about the relative talent on those squads. Kansas won the Big 12 tournament for the billionth time in a row under Bill Self and has one of the best players in the country in Devontae Graham, who's playing at a really high level. I think this is going to be the Sweet 16 game. I think that we all want to see is Duke-Michigan State.
Sure.
You know, a rematch of the early season game. You know, way back when we were doing this podcast back in November, you predicted that Duke would beat Michigan State in that November matchup. I didn't think so. I thought Michigan State is older, and I thought that experience would prevail. But sure enough, the freshman came out and played so well for Duke that night in Chicago. But now Duke's totally different. You know, exclusively zone defense, much against Mike Krzyzewski's coaching roots, but he's a smart guy and he adjusts. Duke defensively is far better. What I worry about with Duke is health, because Wendell Carter was nursing a foot a little bit in Brooklyn, and then Duval had an ankle issue and he went scoreless, I believe. I know he's 0 for 6 from the floor. I don't know if he made any free throws, but in the semifinal loss to North Carolina, in the tournament. He did not look right. If either of those guys is gimpy, then the Blue Devils are just not going to make it. And I know Krzyzewski owns Izzo. I don't know what the exact number is.
Yeah,
but the winning percentage is just crazy. But I've got Michigan State going to San Antonio. I've got two Big Ten teams, and the Big Ten was clearly down only four squads in the bracket. But I think the Michigan State Duke Sweet 16 game would be fascinating, and then Michigan State, you know, if the bracket holds, which I think it will, Michigan State Kansas. You think CBS would like that in Omaha for a Midwest final?
Kansas isn't getting to Omaha.
Kansas is losing two.
I don't know.
Dot dot dot.
I don't know.
Not getting to Omaha. So you've got them losing to Seton Hall or NC State.
Sorry. They're not getting to the Elite Eight. I have them losing in the Sweet 16. I don't know who is going to beat them, but whoever they play in that game,
So you think they're going to lose to Auburn or Clemson?
Yes, I understand the logic in me picking them to lose without knowing who their opponent is.
Right,
but they have had a lot of games in the Bill Self era where they have underdelivered in pressure situations. Well, I know they've won a national title.
Yes, they have.
But there have been a lot of instances where they've come up short.
Oh, and don't I know? You could go. You could comb our archives for my Final Four predictions over the years after the field is announced, and I think I have taken no more bigger bath with any team.
Than Kansas.
Almost every year I picked the Jayhawks to make the Final Four, and this year I just said, I ain't doing it. Now, I picked them last year, and they came really close. But still, you know, I've been burned too many times not picking them.
So you'd mentioned the power at the top of this with Duke and Michigan State and Kansas. And then Auburn, also the regular season SEC champion.
Yeah. Not to be dismissed.
I think that they lose. I think Auburn probably would be the team. They started so strong, and then injuries got them. And they've just been. I know they played better. They couldn't play worse against Virginia than they did the first time they played Virginia. Virginia makes a couple free throws. Those front ends of 1-1s down the stretch, and that game's not nearly as comfortable as it got.
Right.
I like Auburn to get to the Elite Eight.
Wow.
Against Duke. I'm going to stick to – I may have said it the next podcast after Duke beat Michigan State. I think these two teams are going to play for the national title.
Yeah.
And they will play, but it's going to be much earlier than we thought. And I think Duke wins.
So you got Duke in the Final Four.
I do. Something about – if they can stay healthy,
they're the most talented team in the country.
Yes, and they have the best coach.
Yeah,
and
that's a pretty good combination.
That is a pretty good combination. I would, Oklahoma has been just pelted down the stretch, and I do think once we get into the tournament, you know how league play goes. You mm-hmm. see the same people; they throw junk at you. You start to figure out how to stop things. This could be, Trae Young's kind of revival. I don't think they have enough to carry them a few games. And I also think they have a tough first-round matchup with Rhode Island.
They do.
I think either of those teams could give Duke a little bit of a scare. If Trae Young gets to the next round, and I know they've changed their defensive approach, but if he shoots, if he's getting open looks against the zone,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that could be a very dangerous game for them. But I at the end of the day, in a year that has been so unpredictable, I'm going to put my money on the best coach with the best players.
Not a bad theory.
Are they going to lose all four of them to the draft?
I don't know. Clearly Carter and Bagley mm-hmm. are gone. I don't think Gary Trent is. I think he'll be back. I think he's really good, but from what you read from the draft nicks and such, he's not as regarded, even as Duval is, mm-hmm. as a playmaker. So I would kind of expect Trent to be back. I think, I always think everybody's going, so Duval probably goes too.
If they could get two of those guys, those two back, coming in with R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson, and they're probably the preseason number one next year.
Yes.
And we like Bagley's certainly gone, and
and
Carter is almost certainly gone.
The two of them are absolutely gone.
Okay, so I'm sitting at Duke. I didn't make a pick in the West, but
you did.
I like Michigan too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I talked you into it.
Duke, Michigan,
Virginia,
and
come to the East.
Come to the East. All right, let's start at the bottom.
All right,
the bottom half. What do you? That's there is a bunch of teams in that bottom half that either don't have the pedigree in recent years of making runs deep into the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you've liked Purdue, or you like Purdue early in the season,
and I still like Purdue a lot. I think Carson Edwards is one of the most dynamic players in the country. Really like watching him play. I mean, he can push it. And he can score it. And Purdue has post offense to complement him. I think Matt Painter, I know he has not reached a Final Four, and he gets some gas for that. But I think he is a fine coach. And I like the Boilermakers. I think this is going to be a chalk region. And I like the Boilermakers to get to the Elite Eight.
Texas Tech is the 3 seed in that bracket. And they have very little history, at least since Bobby Knight had a couple good teams.
Yeah.
But they beat Kansas at Kansas.
Mm-hmm. No, Texas Tech's had a great year.
I probably would say Purdue. Their resume is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly played in a league with the top end talent being better than the other. I mean, Michigan and Michigan State are very good. Ohio State was fine. Mm-hmm. I think Purdue would probably be the team that I like too.
You know, I'll throw this out there to you because we have an example of it in this half of the bracket. But most every year since they started the first four, where you had some of the at-large teams playing in Dayton, one of those two teams that wins in Dayton to move onto that 11 or 12 line has made noise subsequently in the main bracket. Started the first year with VCU in 2011, which is the first and still only team to win 5 games
mm-hmm.
to get to the Final Four. You've got St. Bonaventure or UCLA is going to move on to play Florida. I think both of those teams are pretty darn good. I think Arizona State or Syracuse could give Texas Christian all at once in the first round in Detroit.
I think if I was putting odds on, I like Bonaventure. They had some pretty good tussles down the stretch with some the A-10. I mean, I know it's not as deep as some of the other leagues,
right?
But the top half, I mean, Bob McKillop is a great coach.
Yes, he is.
Really
cool to see him in the tournament.
I don't care how down Davidson is. That's going to be a tough one. And they weren't down. They just didn't have the resume to make it as an at-large.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Rhode Island had a very good season. But even when you get into, you've been to games at the Siegel Center.
Oh,
VCU. That's a tough place to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's plenty of... that. The middle part of that league is very... There's no easy ones, I don't think. It's not like someone just runs away with the league. So I think they're more battle-tested than some people may think. I like them to beat Florida. In 7 straight years, I don't know if you said that one of those playing game teams have won a game.
Yeah.
In 7 straight years. And often it's been more than one game.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned.
That's so, every year since it started. 2011 to 17, each year.
And the Bonnies could be a team. I mean, would you be shocked if they beat Texas Tech?
No. No, not at all. Especially, and his name is going to escape me. You can look it up online. But Texas Tech's best player has been dinged here late in the regular season, and I'm not sure why I can't pull his name, and I feel badly. But they've had some injury issues here late. St. Bonaventure moving on.
Keenan Evans.
Yeah.
Is that who you're looking for?
Yep, exactly.
You filibustered just long enough.
There you go. I'm glad we got a good wireless connection in here.
Yeah, and one of the other things I wrote down, which was interesting, I thought a statistic I saw, that was that the number one overall seed in the tournament has won the championship just as many times as they've lost in the second round since 2004. So three times teams have gone on to win the national title, but also three times the team has lost in the second round of the tournament, which happened last year with Villanova mm-hmm. as the number one overall seed. 2010, Kansas, and 2004, Kentucky, both lost in the second round.
I knew Bill Self was in there.
Of course he was. And the teams to win it all were 2013 Louisville, 2012 Kentucky, and 2007 Florida as the number one overall seed. Seven times in the last 14 years, the number one overall seed made the Final Four.
There you go.
So 50%.
So 50% chance that Virginia's going to San Antonio.
I actually think I saw the 538 odds of winning the national title. They were at like 48. Maybe it was Final Four. They were like 48% based on all the analytics. So that sits right at that number.
Yeah.
I think Villanova had the best odds to win it all. And I think their draw is the easiest. And that works since we're going to talk about them right now.
Let's do it.
Virginia Tech in the 8-9 game in Pittsburgh against Alabama. One of those very rare double-digit 15 loss, 14 loss or more teams.
It's the most losses ever for an at-large team, 15. Yeah. It matches Vanderbilt. Last year, Vanderbilt got in at 19-15, same record as the Crimson Tide this year. But hey, you know, they beat Auburn twice, including in the SEC tournament, which is a game I thought they needed to win to make the field. But clearly, as a 9 seed, they didn't need
probably,
to win it.
Probably not. Since 1987, at-large teams with 14 or more losses are 4-9. But the 9 teams that lost probably didn't have Colin Sexton.
Right. But I think Virginia Tech wins.
Do you?
I do, because other than Colin Sexton, you know, Alabama's overall shooting percentages aren't good. Virginia Tech's, and I know they spit the bit badly against Notre Dame in the ACC tournament, but I think Buzz Williams' team has been good all year about forgetting the unforgettable. You know, the 26-point loss at home to UVA, the 22-point loss at Duke. They reversed mm-hmm. both those defeats the next time they face that team. I think they can put Notre Dame behind them, probably a learning experience. I think defensively, Virginia Tech, I don't think they neutralize Sexton, but I certainly think they can limit him enough to advance in the bracket for the first time since 2007.
If they hold him in check, yeah, they win that game. And the other thing about the Notre Dame game, I know it's hard to take apart little pieces here and there because they all make up. It's like the person blaming one ref call on losing a game. There's so many different things that happen. But they're not going to go 1-for-16 down the stretch again, I don't think.
That's what was so odd about Buzz Williams' comments afterward. And I know they didn't defend great down the stretch. But when he said, you know, offensively we were okay, where we broke down was defensively, I'm thinking, dude, you just went 1-for-16 from the floor. That is so not okay.
But, and I may be remembering this wrong, but they missed open shots. They weren't taking, there were some bad shots they took for sure, but they were missing open shots. And, you know, I guess if you're a coach spinning it the right way, you don't get too upset about missing open shots because you're happy that you had the looks. And if you have those, I'm guessing 33 to 40% of the time they're going in. If you're talking about open looks, they probably go in closer to 40% of the time. So, yeah, they took some bad shots down the stretch. And Bonzi Colson hit a miracle bank shot over two defenders.
Yeah. And that was the one that gave Notre Dame the lead. And that's where I just turned to Norm and said, whoa.
Yeah,
it's not there.
That is not a shot that anyone should ever hit. It was completely luck.
Well, it was like the DeAndre Hunter shot at Louisville, sure, except earlier in the game.
Yes, yes. Speaking of which, full running off the deep end here, but I saw someone bank one in from the corner in the SEC championship game.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yeah, well, I've seen it. But Darius Thompson 2 years ago for UVA at Wake Forest hit a buzzer beater three off glass from the deep left corner. To cap a remarkable comeback for the Cavaliers.
Yeah, you're living good when that happens.
Yes.
All right. So I do think Virginia Tech wins if they can keep Sexton in check. That beast they face in the next round is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think Virginia Tech's beaten Villanova. I think Villanova has two of the 15 best players in the country. I think Jalen Brunson's the player of the year.
And Michael Bridges.
Yeah. Yep.
You think he's the player of the year?
Jalen Brunson?
In the country?
Absolutely, I do. Yeah. And I think he's going to win it.
Blewett?
No, Brunson.
You don't think Blewett would be?
No, I think Ayton's probably number two.
Ayton's been incredible down the stretch.
Yeah, I think Brunson. Just as I know he's not as flashy as some of those other guys. He doesn't have, he doesn't lead the country in scoring and assists like Trae Young. But just everything he brings to Villanova, I think media voting on these awards is sophisticated enough to have an appreciation for that. I think Jalen Brunson is going to be Player of the Year.
Brunson, so All-American team would probably be him, Bagley, Ayton,
Graham
and Blewett,
or Trae Young.
All right, so Villanova, and it's been remarkable what, Villanova for a long time was a team that couldn't take that, under Jay Wright, couldn't take that next step, right? Mm-hmm. And now it seems like the floodgates are open a little bit.
They've
won a national title. They've been deep into the tournament. I know last year was a disappointment.
Yeah. But, he made a Final Four back in, what was it? I forget what year they went to Detroit in the Final Four. That was his first Final Four, which was 2009.
And Randy Foy?
I believe, yep.
Maybe.
And that was your North Carolina won the Natty out there. Yeah, it was 2009 because it's the same year Virginia hired Tony Bennett.
So, Villanova, you picked them in the Final Four, right?
I did.
I don't think there's a whole lot in that bracket that's going to stop them.
I think if Villanova West Virginia Sweet 16 game could be pretty cool. The Mountaineers lost 10 games, did not play great down the stretch, but as they showed in beating UVA and Morgantown back early in the season, they can up-tempo you. They can create turnovers. But a guy like Brunson, when you have him in your backcourt, that pressure that West Virginia brings isn't as effective.
Some pretty solid coaches in the top half of that bracket, too.
Oh, Jay Wright, Huggy.
Greg Marshall,
absolutely. I'd put Buzz Williams in that league. Buzz Williams can absolutely coach and proved his NCAA tournament chops at Marquette. He had a team in, I think he had two Sweet 16s and an Elite 18.
So, couching my earlier prediction of Duke getting to a Final Four, I think, picking them, when I say that they get to the best coach and the best talent gets them to a Final Four, I still think Villanova is in the national championship game.
I've got Villanova playing Virginia for it all.
I think that Villanova...
Which would be fascinating because Jay Wright and Tony Bennett are friends, and the two teams scrimmaged during the preseason. Yeah.
Would you like to have had a camera in that gym?
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where the public can't be there, no media can be there. It's the NCAA, you can either play a public exhibition or you can have two scrimmages. And UVA always chooses the closed scrimmages, and one of the teams they scrimmaged was Villanova.
I'm fine with that. I think I agree. Villanova and Virginia. I think Villanova wins.
As do I.
I wanted to ask you, because of Virginia's defensive approach, if you're the team getting them on the second game of a weekend like this,
right?
You're at much more... If they're going to lose, the team that plays them first has a much better advantage than the team that plays them second, right?
You would think. Just in terms of preparation time, it's not a great analogy, but it's almost like preparing for the option in football.
Yeah.
And Paul Johnson, if you can get an extra week to prepare, you feel a lot better about your defensive plan than you would otherwise. Just because, not that no one else plays a pack line type defense. Plenty of teams try.
No one plays it
like they do.
Right. You're right.
Yeah.
All right, so now we're going to start our NIT bracket reveal.
No, we're not. Neither of us has time for that.
No, neither of us do have that time. All right, so you'll be down in Charlotte for the first round Oh, well, I guess now the second round. I don't know if we've gone back to calling it the first
round. No, it's the first round.
Okay, the first round of the tournament.
Blessedly so.
And the second round, we have a late tip Friday night with Virginia and Maryland, Baltimore County.
A school near and dear to my heart.
Because you're from Baltimore.
Absolutely. And two of my buddies won a national lacrosse championship at UMBC.
Really?
Two guys who were in my wedding. Absolutely. Division II national championship.
And ties to the ACC, right? Coach?
Ryan Odom, who grew up in Charlottesville when his daddy was an assistant at UVA. He used to ride his bike to practice every day at University Hall and sit next to Jeff Jones, who was then a graduate assistant. I talked to Ryan for about 25 minutes on the phone today. I talked to Ryan's daddy, Dave Odom, for about a half hour yesterday. Really looking forward to writing about father and son leading into the UVA-UMBC game.
And their best player is a Virginia Commonwealth transfer.
Yeah. Wiles, and hit the big shot at the buzzer to win at Vermont.
After they'd lost, got bombed twice in the regular season by Vermont. Okay, yeah, they lost by a combined 40-something.
Including their christening of their new building, which they opened during the season. The first game is against Vermont, and yeah, they got housed.
Well, you'll be there with Dave Johnson. Yep. We'll have coverage of that part of the bracket. North Carolina's playing down there.
Yeah, North Carolina's there. And then
Providence with Reggie Bullock from Hampton. And then Norm's up in Pittsburgh.
With Virginia Tech and Duke.
And so we'll see if he's there for two games or if he's just there for the one. I think he's going to be there for the weekend.
I do too.
All right, everybody. Stay tuned all week to dailypress.com. We'll have plenty of coverage of all these games. And you follow David on Twitter at David Teal at DP.
That's
all one word.
Yep.
And he'll be on top of all this. And I think we'll probably be doing this for a few weeks.
Sounds great, man.
All right. Thanks.